and the decisions we make in this moment.
Where we were almost
stay hungry, stay foolish.
We were becoming
right.
Something greater.
Awesome. Folks, today we have a really special guest with us, a Gabriel Dean Anderson, the owner of The Creperie, as well as a design company. Gabriel, just really quickly, where did you grow up and what kind of a kid were you growing up?
So I grew up in Colorado. We lived outside of a small town called Castle Rock. We lived out in the country. We had like 9 acres of land, which was great in some ways. Not so great in others. I was always jealous of all my friends who, like, we'd go to school and they'd be like, hey, Alex, you can come over after school today? And they'd be like, yeah. But I could never do that because I lived out in the middle of nowhere because they lived in town, like, right down the street from each other. So I was always a little jealous of that. But at the same time, like, looking back on it, it was a great childhood. I was able to kind of just run free. I'm the youngest of 9 kids.
Wow.
Yeah. So as far as what kind of kid I was a weird kid.
In what way?
Like,
what do you mean?
I think that I always wanted to differentiate myself from my siblings, like be my own person. And so I just did weird things. Like I was just into weird things.
Like Yu-Gi-Oh?
No.
Like what do you, like playing in dirt? Like what do you,
well,
what do you mean?
Like for instance, when it came to sports, I couldn't just play a normal sport. I pole vaulted. Like,
oh, nice. Yep.
You know, I just stuff like that. Like I always wanted to do something different that, you know, hadn't already been done by one of my 8 siblings.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess we look back on it, we all feel like we were kind of a weird kid, right? Because kids are weird.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I have 3 now, and they're weird. They do weird things.
Totally weird. Yeah. And it gets weirder, too, because it's different. It's like the time moves, and then new things happen. So then now we don't understand why they're doing what they're doing. Like, oh, yeah, like, I was into, like, Pokemon cards and Hot Wheels and, like, doing like random sports outside, and now it's like, oh, there's a new app or there's something else going on, and it's just kind of, I feel like it's different.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So clearly you were into Pokemon.
I was growing up, yeah. And
see,
it was
for me it was Pogs. I don't know,
I
you're probably
Pogs.
Too young.
No,
do you remember that?
Pogs. Yeah. We used to play for keeps and that was like the worst.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I don't want to give that was like my shiny one. You know?
Oh yeah, those shiny ones. Yeah. Yeah. Like the holographic ones, those were the best.
Those, yeah.
Oh yeah.
I remember that. I was kind of at the tail end of that though, so I will admit that I didn't have a great collection. But I did start working it up, and then by that time then Pokemon came out and Pogs kinda went away in our family.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, I never got into Pokemon at all until the app Pokemon Go came out,
yeah.
And then I was into it for like 2 weeks, and that's my experience with Pokemon is that 2 week period where I played the app.
I haven't got into it, and it's like a new TV show. Like I don't want to start it because I feel like I'm just gonna get too involved, and then my life is gonna go downward because I'm like, oh man, I want to watch it or I want to go out inside and do it or something. I don't know.
Well, you gotta catch them all.
You gotta.
So. Yeah.
That's a good point. So one question that I always forget to ask, but I want to start getting better at it and kind of changing topics. That's why I prefaced it with that,
mm-hmm.
is what drives you and has that changed over time? And I know that's kind of a deeper question than Pokemon, but I know if I don't ask, I'll forget it.
So I've always had kind of a need to explore. And I feel like that is entrepreneurship. Like once you get into it, that's what it's all about. I think that there's a difference between, like, not everybody who owns a business is an entrepreneur in that way. Like, you know, they're somebody who has their own accounting firm or something like that, like where it's a specialized thing. I think that's a little different than somebody who who's just interested in opening businesses. And usually that type of person opens multiple businesses, tries multiple different things in different areas. And to me, it's all about kind of exploring and finding the solution and figuring out how to make it work and doing it your own way. And I've always just kind of been that type of person of just feeling, I don't need to do this the way that everybody else does it. I'm a smart person. I can figure out how to make it work on my own terms. And I think that's always just kind of what's driven me is just to be able to figure out my own way of making things work and not having to necessarily follow somebody else's path.
Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like it's going back to like what you said earlier, with just like trying to do something different and exploring is almost seem like hand in hand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. And that's exactly what it is.
Okay.
So that's really what drives me. And I mean, outside of, you know, external thing, like my, obviously I've got three kids and a wife, like things change when you have a family, you know, you, there's a whole new set of influences that are driving you to succeed, to, you want to be able to provide for your family and whatnot. And so obviously that's a big part of what drives me now, but just in terms of that internal personal drive, it's really about that need to blaze my own path, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I think there's a whole bunch of study, or I don't know if there's studies, but there's a whole bunch of theories that, you know, doing the opposite. I mean, you know, I kind of got introduced to it, I think, from the 4-Hour Work Week, when he says, just do things that people don't do usually. So like lay down on a sidewalk or face people in the elevator. And his idea was like, it's different, but as well, it gets you out of your comfort zone, and that is supposed to be helpful. But I really do think that there's something there with like doing things different, mm-hmm. you know? And sometimes I try to think, okay, you know, if everyone does this, you know, what's the exact opposite? And I don't know, I'm still testing that out, but I want to believe that the exact opposite is just what you need to do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's, you have to be able to learn from other people. You know, what, obviously if everybody's doing something one way, you know, it's because it works. That doesn't mean it's the only way that it can work. So yeah, I mean, I think it's important to look at how everybody else does things and learn from that, but to not be closed off to the idea that there are other ways that you can do things, and that you can succeed, you know, with those other things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So the creperie.
Yes.
Still kind of in that realm, being something different. We didn't have, at least to my knowledge, I don't think we had anything like that besides maybe Denny's or IHOP that offered.
Well,
IHOP.
Come on. You can't compare me to Denny's and IHOP.
I'm just saying that's the only
that
thing similar.
That hurts me. Like that's that. Hold on. I need a minute. Whew. All right. Okay. I think I'm going to be all right.
I only say that because that's the only thing I can think of that would be similar to the creperie. It's almost like, you know, introducing a creperie, specializing crepes, was completely different in Logan.
Yeah.
What was your background before opening the creperie? Where did you have a business background? Had you started or done anything with that? Or was the creperie the first one that just...
No, so the creperie was the first one. And, you know, I spent a month in Paris and fell in love with like European style crepes, which are totally different from what you get at Denny's and IHOP. And so I'll give you the origin story. So my wife and I went to Summerfest one year, and there was a woman that was selling crepes just out of like a truck, you know, not like the pickup truck, but like, you know, a food mm-hmm. truck.
Yeah.
So I just had this vision of somebody like buying crepes from a creepy person out of the back of a pickup truck. It was not that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but it was, I got like a ham and cheese crepe, and it was totally overpriced and it was horrible. And I said to my, I was just like, I could do better than this. And for those of you who aren't married, just take note. When you say something like that to your wife, then you have to actually do it. So now I own a creperie is really what it comes down to. So, I mean, it really goes back to this, I'm just this type of person that believes that I can do better than everybody else, which is so super arrogant. And that's not, I feel dirty just saying that out loud, but I do. I mean, I look at that and it's something where I had no business background. I didn't study business. I studied design, interior design specifically in school. At that point I'd worked for a big interior design firm in New York. And then we were back in Logan for grad school. And so I had no business background, but I looked at it and I was like, I could do better. And so I did. I you know, opened up the creperie and it became pretty successful. So
yeah.
That's the origin story.
I feel like that's such like a, I feel like that is so many or so often, you know, the thing like, oh, I could do better than that.
Yeah.
And then boom. We have something that everyone knows about. We're like, oh, that's pretty good. Like, that's awesome.
I think that, I mean, it goes back to creativity, and that's what I studied in school in design. I mean, it's all about creativity. I personally think creative people make the best entrepreneurs. If you're studying business like that, you can be a good entrepreneur too. But I feel like a lot of business schools, and I from what I've heard about the Huntsman School of Business, it's a little different. But I feel like a lot of business schools teach people to work in business, but not necessarily to own a business, because mm-hmm. It beats all of the ability to take risk out of you. And if you're opening a business, I mean, it's all risk. It's 100% risk, and you have to be able to weigh and balance those risks and make good decisions there. I feel like it takes a lot of creativity to make it work, and so I think creative people definitely make the best entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. I think you can see that in a lot of stories too. You know, people like they just have to solve a crazy problem, and you have to be creative to solve it. You know.
Yeah.
So going with that then, can you tell us maybe the beginning stages of the Crapery? How was it birthed, and how did it grow up
to so, where it is now? Yeah, so we had no money to start this. And if you've ever gone to a bank and said, hey, I've got this great restaurant idea, like that's about as far as you get before they show you the door. Banks do not like to give money to restaurants at all, especially like something that's unproven. It's just not going to happen. I mean, I've been able to get loans since then just based on success that we've already been able to show, but a startup restaurant, good luck. And so we didn't have any money, so we knew that we had to start really small. And so we came up with this idea that that we could share the financial burden with somebody else. And so there was a coffee shop. I don't know how long you've been in Logan. We used to be in a different location. There's a coffee shop that it doesn't exist anymore, but it was called Citrus and Sage. And it was in this adorable little house. And we went to the owner of Citrus and Sage, and we presented this idea. We said, look, we can come in here and we can split the rent and split all the bills, and we'll be a complement to each other's customers. And so she agreed, and so we set up shop inside Citrus and Sage. For any of you guys who went back then, it was tiny. We were this tiny little counter. We were working out of mini fridges, like literally.
Like a dorm fridge.
We had that's like awesome. Four of those, and that's what we worked out of. Like my wife and I, every morning, we had to go to Sam's Club to buy like milk and eggs and stuff because we didn't have room to store it. Yeah. I mean, now obviously we have a lot more space, and we you know have orders that come in twice a week. But back then, it was, I mean, we were doing that every morning. We'd go to the store and buy our milk and eggs and come and I was putting in, you know, a lot of hours behind the counter spinning crepes. Nowadays, I don't. You know, very rarely will you see me actually making crepes at the Crapery. I spend my time on other things now. But back then, I spent a lot of time. So, I mean, opening a business, especially a restaurant, you just have to know that it's going to be hours and hours and hours of work, and you're not going to make any money at first. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's just how it is.
It seems almost I feel like there's a gap between going from where you were to where you are now. I mean, were you able to raise enough capital to get the space that you have now? Because the space you have now is great. It's got a lot of space. Mm-hmm. It's in a pretty good location. How did that happen? How did you go from...
So, I mean, we grew steadily. We made a lot of mistakes. I think our biggest mistake... I don't know if we're getting into that yet.
Yeah, no,
let's
please.
Get into that.
Yeah,
so our biggest mistake... That. When we first opened was we opened, we're just like, you know what, this is college students are going to love us. And they do, like we kill with college students. And so we advertised up here on campus and a lot of that. And it was going great. We opened in August, you know, we were steadily growing, and then December came and all of the students left. And we almost went out of business.
Oh, man.
We just died. Like, nobody came in because we just completely had ignored you know, the 80% of the population, or whatever it is. I think it's around 80% of the population. When, and so, I mean, that was our first really big mistake, and it really did almost put us out of business. But anyways, we got past that. We realized that we had to get the town on board as well, and so we started to advertise and to try to do that. But we grew a lot, and we outgrew the space there. To get back to what you were asking before, I mean, we got to a point where we would have a line out the door on Saturdays, and so we, because we could only fit one person behind the counter. It was so small that was it, just one person. And so eventually, it came to a point where we knew we had to expand. At that point, we did have to take out a loan with the bank. It was totally backed by us personally, and we had to put up our house as collateral to get that loan. Which, starting a business when you have to do those things, and so that took us having a tremendous amount of faith in our business. But we did. We took out that loan. We managed to move down to the much larger space. Not that it's large, it's still really small. But yeah, so we did that, and that was the second time that we almost went out of business.
Why was it the second time?
So because we
summer came.
Well, summer's actually great. It's our best time of year because the students that are here eat out a lot more and it's good. Anyways, but we mistimed our move. The building that we're in right now, it needed a lot of work to be able to even be habitable. And so there was a lot of construction that had to happen on it, and that just took a lot longer than we anticipated. And so there was about a month period where we were out of our old place, but we weren't in our new place yet. And so that month, I mean, you're still paying all of your bills, or at least a lot of your bills, but there's no money coming in. And so that was difficult. We got the okay from the building inspector, the city building inspector, on Friday at around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And by 3 o'clock that afternoon, we were open.
Wow.
Because we had to be, like, we couldn't go another weekend without being open. And so we bombarded all our social media, put up the sign saying that we were open, and we actually had a really good showing that night. So yeah, hustle. You got to hustle.
That's a pretty crazy story.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even probably thought of that. I would probably been in the same situation and been like, okay, cool, let's move over. And then been like, oh, great, all these things have to get done now. Yeah. And we've already moved out. So what do we do? Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's
a lot of lessons learned. I mean, and that's a lot of that comes down to, again, I didn't study business in school. I mean, these are all things that were all new to me. And so I, you definitely have to to learn these things at some point, whether you learn them in school or learn them through doing it, you have to learn them.
Yeah. Did you talk to anyone about, I thought about when I was younger, I thought about having doing something mobile with food. I wanted to do something stationary, but they said in California that you would have to have, had to be on wheels. Otherwise you had to like go through a bunch more regulations and pay a bunch of taxes. But how did you learn? I mean, is it just simple Google searches with like, oh, how much do I need to have? How chilled do I have to have the milk? And, you know, what are the regulations and what kind of taxes and things am I going to have to pay? Or did you go through any of that before? Or was that just kind of like on the go? You're like, okay, we're ready for this. Let me Google it.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it was on the go learning. There were two things from the beginning. I knew that I needed to have an amazing accountant that I hired, that I wasn't going to try to do any of that myself, and that I needed to have a really good lawyer, that I could go to, because I certainly wasn't going to try to do any of that myself. And I would definitely recommend that to anybody. If you're looking to start up a business, you can do pretty much everything yourself. You can learn pretty much everything, but law and accounting, hire an expert. just do yourself a favor. I know that they seem really expensive, but they will save you loads of money in the long run. Hire a lawyer and an accountant. I can't stress that enough. Unless you like actually specialized in school for those things, like just hire somebody because it's worth every penny that you'll pay them.
How did you pay them in the beginning? Because that's always my biggest fear too, is like, well, you're right. I 100% agree with you. I need a good accountant and I probably need a pretty good lawyer as well. But I honestly don't know how I would afford that.
Yeah. So as far as a lawyer, you know, you don't need a lawyer until you need them, you know, which is good. So I mean, I have had to have a lawyer a few different times dealing with crapery matters, but not right at the beginning. It wasn't until we were a little better established. Accounting, I mean, I didn't have somebody that was, you know, on payroll doing the books full time. We were such a small company that I was able to do all the data input in terms of just putting into the computer. Yeah, QuickBooks.
Okay.
And then our accountant, you know, at the end of the year, he went through our books and made sure everything was good and then did our taxes for us and all that kind of thing. Oh, and we have them do payroll as well. And so at first, it's not a lot of money that you're having to pay an accountant because they're only spending a couple hours on you a month. And so it's not too bad at first, and you have to factor that in.
Yeah.
And then that's before we opened up, I spent hours and hours just, you know, estimating how much money I would need for my operating expenses, how much I would need for my startup, just so I would know how many customers I had to have walk through the door in order to survive. And so, and that's important too. You should know your numbers. Like,
right.
Always know your numbers.
So I mean, that's a good sign, honestly, because I was kind of more worried that, like, it would just be, I guess I haven't done it, so I don't know, like, the whole accounting side, and so that's kind of a relief to find out that it's doable.
Yeah.
You know, you get them to do a couple hours here and there, and then when you're ready, then, you know, get them on payroll, get them doing things that are going to cost more money, but
exactly,
you have more revenue.
So yeah.
That's really, really cool. Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the things that you learned with the business, and then I want to kind of transfer over to maybe advice for people starting a business.
Sure.
So what was the biggest takeaway for you going through that process, going to where you are now today? What was the biggest thing that stuck out to you? Like, wow, I didn't realize that, or that was an eye-opener, or something like that. Or was there?
I mean, a lot of it has been little things. You know, I have a lot of times people, especially like college-age students, you know, want to sit down and talk about things. That's one thing that I never had that I wish that I would have is a mentor. If you are looking to start up a business and you have somebody who has done it successfully that you can talk to, I would highly recommend taking advantage of that. I never had that, and I think I could have saved myself a lot of headaches had I just had somebody to talk to about some of these things. But yeah, I mean, it's primarily a lot of little things. I don't think that there was any one big thing that was just like, yes, this is the secret. I think if anybody comes to you telling you a secret to success in business, then they're salesmen. You know, they're just trying to sell you on something. There's not one secret. It's just a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. If you're not willing to work hard, then it's probably not going to work out for you. I mean, I want to be lazy. Like, that's my whole goal in life, is I don't want to have to. Like, my dad, he worked like a dog his whole life. And I say that with utmost respect. He was one of the most hardworking people I've ever met in my life. But I never got to see him. I mean, he was never around because he was working. I mean, he had 9 kids. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to support. And so I respect that. But I always wanted to not have to do that. And so my idea was, you know, I can put in that time before my kids have, you know, are before I have kids or before they get older. I can put in that time where I'm working crazy, but also trying to work smart. And then hopefully I can get things to a point where I can hire somebody else to handle some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that answered any of your questions. I go off on tangents.
You totally did. I think, honestly, the whole conversation has been super insightful because it's really just raw. This is what happened. This is what we did. And it's things that people don't usually talk about. You know, like, I bring up accounting and taxes and things like that because you hear these people like, oh, yeah, well, we started the company and then we moved to this bigger place. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Back up. How do I move to the bigger place? Like, that, I know that's not just as easy as like opening the door, turning the lights on and be like, all right, guys, come on in. Like, we got all the products. Like, let's do it. You know?
Yeah.
And so it's been super insightful.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I mean, as far as that, from going from here to there, it's, there's a lot that goes into it. One thing that I recommend to people, don't go too big too soon. And don't try to grow too quickly. A lot of businesses die that way. But they feel like they're too big for their britches, and they grow too quickly, and then they realize that they spent a lot of money and they don't have the income to justify it. Mm-hmm. So I would just caution against that, about growing too quickly. I mean, we didn't move to a bigger space until we absolutely had to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and our success in the early stages was because our overhead was so low. I mean, we were paying, like I said, we were splitting the rent, splitting all of our utilities with another company. We only had a handful of employees, and we kept it really small as long as we could.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think that's so, I mean, again, speaking out of minimal experience, but I think that's so important, you know, just to, that's kind of the name of the game, really. You know, it's just grow when you're ready and take things as they come.
Yeah.
You know, you did mention more of like a passive working and lifestyle. And I'm really interested into this personally, and I'm glad you brought it up. How, and if you don't mind me asking, how passive is what you're doing right now? How passive is the Crepery? Because I hear people say, oh, I want to start a business and then I'm just going to hire a CEO and then I'm done. And I'm like, I don't know if that's really how it works. I don't know if you can trust someone to handle all that.
Yeah.
Or can you? That's the question, I guess.
So, I mean, I think it's important to understand as a business person that most of when you first start out, I talked about when I first started out about how much I was back there turning crepes myself. You know, I was doing everything. And you have to realize that you are replaceable in probably 95% of the tasks that you are doing. And that's not a bad thing to know that. And so if you can replace yourself in those things, if you get to a point where you can afford to do that, you know, it frees you up to do other things to allow the business to grow. The thing you have to be careful of is that it's your business and you care about it. When it's somebody else's business, they don't care about it the same way that you do. But as far as how passive is it for me now, I've gotten to the point where it's very passive. I mean, I still have to do quite a bit. But like I said, I'm never turning crepes myself. You know, I have, here in the Logan store, I have two managers that are amazing, and that's important. I mean, you hire people that you trust, and you hire people that are hard workers and that, you know, are wanting to get the job done, and that's a good thing for you. I also have we have a restaurant in St. George as well, and when we opened that one, our manager at the Crepery, at the Logan store, we actually gave him half of that store.
Wow.
In exchange for him moving to St. George and handling it. And so I was there a lot, you know, when we were building up to opening up the store. I was down there for about half of the week, every week for several months. And then when we opened, I was down there quite a bit. But now I have very little to do with that store. I mean, Jake and I will talk on the phone a couple times a week. But I don't go down there very often. You know, because it's his restaurant now. I mean, he owns half of it. And so He takes pride in it, and it's his just as much as it is mine. And so, it works out well because he has that stake in it, because, you know,
yeah,
he cares to that extent. 100%. But there's still definitely, you have to still maintain things. You still have to put time into something. I've been neglecting the creperie a little bit recently just because of my other business that is in full force now, which is it's a furniture design business, and it takes it's still in its infancy. We've been open for about a year and a half, and so it just takes a lot of my time.
So okay, the furniture story is incredible, and I want to get to that because I think anyone who's listening will find that very interesting, and I know I did when I first heard you talk about it. But really quickly, when it comes to the so I'm going to preface this with the owners of Airbnb, I believe it was them, when they were first hiring, I think they hired their first like 400 people or something, like the owner himself. Mm-hmm. And he would ask them like very intense questions like, if you knew you were going to die in 10 years, would you still take this job? And if people said no, then he wouldn't hire them because he thought like the first employees were so important. And he's like been this big advocate of that, like the first employees are so important, things like that. How important was it for you hiring your first employees? And more importantly, how did you create like a culture or in that organization? Because for me, with working with a startup, I know culture it seems like the hardest, most abstract thing to create. And I feel like if you don't have a good one, it's very difficult, and that's my opinion. I'm not sure.
Yeah, totally. Correct. And it's a little different when you're talking about a company. You know, some of these big companies like Airbnb or Google, these companies who have really tried to create that culture. It's a little different with companies like that as opposed to something like the Creperie, because we're a hospitality company, meaning that it's for us all about customers. We have customers that are in our location all the time, and that's how we get by. And so it's not only a culture that I'm creating for the employees, but it's a culture that I'm creating for our customers as well. And so it's a little bit different than just a company that doesn't really deal with having their customers in the building with them at all times. But you're right, it's really important. Especially here in Logan, where the culture of just the town is interesting. It's a really different kind of culture because you have the university, which plays a big part in this town, but then you have it's an agricultural town as well. And, you know, a lot of that crowd, the agricultural, you know, the farmers, mm-hmm. and whatnot. I mean,
yeah.
I've heard people say crepes. Maybe my wife would like that. You know, that kind of a thing, which is fine. You know, you got to understand you're not going to be for everybody. But you have to understand that Logan is a weird place. It's also, I think, about 70% LDS. And so in terms of culture, you say culture, I think of it more in terms of atmosphere. Because I studied interior design in school, and creating an interior goes beyond just making it pretty. It's about branding the space. It's about creating an entire atmosphere and experience for people who walk in that door. And so, I always wanted to. Mormon kids want to have the coffee shop experience. They do. It's just this cool experience that people like to have.
That's great.
But they don't drink coffee, and they don't want to feel guilty going into a place that is just a coffee shop like Starbucks. Even if they're ordering a hot chocolate or a steamer or whatever, they still feel out of place. So I really wanted to create a place that had the coffee shop feel, but it didn't have to be a place where you're just getting coffee. And so that was a big part of what I was trying to do with creating my experience, creating my ambiance and atmosphere. As far as hiring people, it's really important that you hire the right people. And this sounds a little weird, but I really, one of the most important things when I was hiring, I wanted to hire people that were religiously ambiguous. Now, it's illegal to ask somebody what their religion is in an interview, or to hire based on what their religion is. And I was doing the opposite of that. I wanted to hire people who weren't going to be judgy one way or another. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of that in a culture like this, where you have kind of the LDS crowd and then the scary counterculture. You know, it just seems like there's that weird divide, and I just wanted to hire people and make sure that the whole atmosphere was one where it said, it doesn't, you can be Mormon, you can be not Mormon, it doesn't matter to us. It's a cool place. Come in, you know, enjoy the cool coffee shop type atmosphere. Regardless of any of that. Yeah. And I mean, this was really like, when we were first starting up, this was a lot of what I was really trying to do, just create this atmosphere. And so, hiring good employees that are really welcoming and that are friendly and that, you know, are not judgmental is really important.
Yeah, I think it's, so I'm just going to give you an update really quick. So we have 7 minutes left. So we have
I babble. I go on and on about things.
We maybe need to do a part two, because I'm loving it. Like I don't know about anyone else, but for me personally, I'm soaking it all up. And this stuff is like the whole idea of like a culture and atmosphere is great. Mm. You know, like an atmosphere creating the culture, and it's so different than maybe my brain works, because I wouldn't have thought about that. My brain doesn't work the same way. I'm not an interior designer or anything like that. But excuse me, but it makes so much sense. Mm. And I can feel that too when I go in there, which is really cool you say that. And I'm like, yeah, when I walk into the creperie, I have that feeling, like it's great, you know? And so I think that's a really good point. I want to just touch really briefly with the furniture.
Yeah.
So maybe like 2 minute synopsis. We'll give a little teaser. Maybe we'll do another one about the furniture. Sure. And then I'm going to ask you really quick some random questions, and then that'll be the show.
Sure. So you want me to just tell you a little bit about
it? Yeah. So like, so first specifically the market that you're in, because that's very interesting. And the materials that you use, I feel like are very interesting. And the people who buy that furniture is like, I had no idea it even existed.
Yeah. And so the people who buy my furniture are billionaires, like with a B. I mean, not all of them, but like I sell to the high end market. I sell in showrooms. I have 3 showrooms: New York, San Francisco, and LA. And they're all trade only showrooms, which means that they're only open to like interior designers. The public can't just go in there and look. And so that's my market. And it makes me feel like I don't sell here in Logan or in Utah at all, because it just wouldn't, you know. And it makes me feel like a real asshole sometimes when people, sorry if I'm not allowed to say
no,
that.
You're completely
when
fine.
People like ask me about it, they'll be like, oh, like how much does that dining table cost? And I seriously feel like it's hard, because basically like I'm not designing for you. Like I'm not designing for me. Like I can't afford my own furniture, you know, I can't at all. It's designed for a very specific group of people, and it's marketed to them and sold to them. But it does make me feel like I'm not trying to be, you know, exclusive or anything. It's just, that's just the market that I sell to. And so,
let's leave it at that. That's perfect. If you want to find out more, maybe tune in later. We'll see. Okay, really quick, rapid fire. What book or books would you recommend?
I'm sure you're looking for like books on entrepreneurship. I'm anything. A super nerd. I don't do that. My wife does. She just read a book about Elon Musk that she loved. So she would recommend that. I didn't read it, but she was constantly talking to me about Elon. I'm a big fan of Elon Musk, so it was great. But for me, I would recommend, I just read, it's called Demon by Daniel Suarez. It's sci-fi. It's phenomenal. It's kind of like if you ever read Ready Player One, which was a big sci-fi book a little while ago. It's kind of like that, just without the 80s pop culture references. It's really good.
Do you set goals? If so, how do you go about making them and then keeping them?
Okay. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So every year my wife and I, we actually just did this. At the end of the year, we sit down and have our year in review. And we go over last year's goals, and then we make new goals. We do 1 year, 5 year, and 10 year goals. And we do this every year. We haven't done it since we were first married, but we've done it for the past probably 4 years. And it is so helpful. And half the time, you know, those goals have gone off in different directions and stuff. And it's, you know, if you don't achieve a goal, like for us at least, it's not like we failed at it. Usually it's that we decided to take things in a different direction. And that's fine. But it's really important that you set those goals and that you have a vision of where you're going to be, you know, in the future. And again, doing that 1, 5, and 10 year thing is really good. And especially if you have somebody that's in it with you, like my wife is my business partner. We work on all of this stuff together. And so for us to sit down and do that is really important. So yeah, definitely set goals, write them down, and then review them like later on down the road.
Awesome. How many hours of sleep do you get a night usually?
5 to 6.
Okay.
Yeah. I usually go to bed at around 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm a late night person and I hate waking up early. I'm not one of these people that's up at 5 in the morning and ready to face the day. Mm-hmm. If I'm up at 5 in the morning, it's already a horrible day. Like just period.
I mean, that's it. You got to know yourself.
Yeah.
Do you have any rituals or morning routines or any routines at all?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. I mean, routine for me, my lifestyle, it just doesn't. I make breakfast for my kids in the morning. And, you know, but honestly, every day is different for me. I don't have a routine. Sometimes I'm focused on the crêperie. Sometimes I'm focused on Gabriel Dean Design. You know, sometimes I'm focused on something else entirely, but you know, I don't have a routine at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's no right answer.
Yeah,
right.
And I wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest. It'd be boring.
If you could have a text message show up on every person's phone in the entire world, what would that message say?
Man, okay, so I got these questions like ahead of time, and I'll be honest, I read them 20 minutes before this interview started, so I wasn't super prepared. And this is a weird question.
It is a weird question.
So I don't know. I feel like most people would say something inspirational. I think, being like completely honest, if I could magically make this happen,
yes,
I think that I would say something to the effect of, you know, we're a race of people from a faraway galaxy. We've been watching you, and we're gonna come back in 1 year. Get your shit together. And we'll see. That's, I just think it'd be hilarious.
That would be absolutely hilarious.
Right? It showed up on everybody's phone. Just watch them scramble.
Like a whole nother like Y2K scare, like 2000s. Okay, that's great. That's my favorite answer so far. If I can be so bold to say that. Maybe I'll cut that part out. And I won't tell people who answered that question in the past won't be upset.
Sorry, I wasn't inspirational.
No, that was great. That's kind of what I wanted.
Just being honest.
Yeah. I wanted just to kind of be, you know, anything you want. Any book, any idea, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so that's perfect. Awesome. Gabriel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and, for sure.
Hope to have you back soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Definitely.